Today we celebrate a very important symbol of unity. But to really appreciate that symbol of unity meant to be a reflection of something much deeper in our individual hearts, we really have to recall how incredibly painful and destructive division is, its opposite. Think among yourselves, how many of you have a family member you haven't spoken to in years? Think about someone who has died, and there was a great deal of need for reconciliation, either from you or from them or both, and it never happened. And we carry that anger, that bitterness, that resentment years after they're dead. It poisons our bodies after it poisons our minds and our hearts. Think of the divisions that we express, especially feel as we get into Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's, and the inevitable conflicts that arise when our family is together and those who refuse to come. Think of conflicts at your work, whether you're the aggressive type or the passive aggressive type, and how uncomfortable and how it robs you of your joy every time you show up, especially on Mondays. Think of the division in our own country. We can't even get the government to work. I don't even know if our family's gonna be able to fly here to begin with the shutdowns. People aren't getting paid. They can't afford food, rent. They have no income, and yet they're still having to work as if we were a communist country. The divisions among us are acute. We experience that on every level, including in the church. Nowadays, with social media, even our bishops are airing their grievances against one another publicly rather than in private as brothers. This division that we experience really starts with the heart and the individual. And so the church today celebrates this symbol of unity in the hopes that we would attain the unity that this church symbolizes. St. John Lateran is one of four basilicas in Rome. It is actually the cathedral of the Bishop of Rome. The word cathedral comes from the Latin cathedra, which literally means chair. It is the chair of authority of the Bishop of Rome. Every diocese has a cathedral, a cathedra. Here in Denver, just less than a mile and a half away, is the Basilica, Cathedral Basilica of the Immaculate Conception. And there, on the left-hand side of the altar, very prominent, beautifully ornate marble, is the cathedra of the Bishop of Denver, the Archbishop. In our case, he's the Metropolitan of the State of Colorado. And that is the seat of his authority. And so the Cathedral of the Immaculate Conception here in Denver is the mother church of all the churches in Northern Colorado. That's where our priests are ordained. God willing, that's where one day Francisco will be ordained in 4 or 5 years from now. Well, today we celebrate the Cathedral of Rome, which isn't St. Peter's, by the way. This church was built before. The Lateran family donated a big parcel of land in 320 or so AD to the Emperor Constantine after he was converted to the Catholic faith, and then the whole empire converted to Catholicism. The Lateran family donated a very valuable piece in the center of Rome to the emperor so that a church would be built. And that was the church built in 324 AD. 1700 plus years later, we're celebrating that church. Now, it's not the same that stands there now. After fires and earthquakes and vandals and the Avignon corrupt papacy that abandoned Rome for over a century and let the entire place fall to ruins, it has been rebuilt. But it is actually the seat of the Pope, not St. Peter's. It's the cathedral of the Bishop of Rome. And so it is the mother church of all churches in the world. It is the cathedral of all 1.3 billion Catholics, a symbol of unity. And underneath the altar, there is a small, very simple wooden table that it is believed St. Peter himself celebrated Mass upon, preserved by St. Helena, the mother of Constantine, and who helped contribute to the building of this church, among many other sacred things in Rome. It is our mother church. And people from all over the world that are Catholic and non-Catholic alike go, some as tourists, hopefully most to pray, but it is a sacred place that reminds us the church is one. Just as Jesus prayed in the Gospel of John, Lord, may they be one as you and I are one, as I am in you and you are in me, may they be in me and I be in them, that the world may see through their unity, the unity of God himself, as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. We are far from that as Christians. There are over 20,000 different Christian denominations in the world. And as I mentioned, the divisions in our country and our church and our community, in the world and the wars that come from it seem like something literally impossible to begin to tackle. So where do we begin? Because a symbol of unity doesn't unify us, right? Our church here is a symbol of unity of our parish community, but there's likely a lot of divisions among us for different reasons. Maybe the only thing you can all agree on is that the Broncos are finally good again. So how do we begin to get to that place of unity if it's so far beyond our reach and out of our hands? Well, the scriptures remind us that more important than St. John Lateran, more important than Sacred Heart, the oldest Catholic church building in the state of Colorado that we're in, the second oldest, is the individual temple of the soul. Jesus did not suffer and die for a building. And we're investing well over $1 million in grants and rebates and financial aid and our own income to renovate this historic, beautiful church, the church, God willing, one day of St. Julia Greeley. But you are more valuable than this place. Christ didn't suffer and die for bricks and stone. He suffered and died for the salvation of each and every individual soul. And so the scriptures remind us, as Paul does in the second reading today, you are God's building. You are more important than St. John Lateran. Jesus suffered, died, rose, and ascended to the right hand of the Father to redeem you and I. God is the master builder of the human person. And only the human person was created in God's image and likeness. We build buildings like these to raise our hearts and minds to God, to create a safe and sacred space to worship Him and gather as a family, but ultimately it's for the sanctification and salvation of each and every individual soul. Paul reminding us, do you not know that you are a temple of God and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? If anyone destroys God's temple, you, God will destroy that person. For the temple of God, which you are, is holy. So if we want to start bringing about unity, it begins with ourselves. The beautiful image of the prophet Ezekiel in today's first reading shows us this temple and his vision where water starts flowing out from the temple. This particular water that everything it touches sprouts and bears fruit. And when it hits the Dead Sea, it turns to fresh water. Now I'm from Florida. We survive off of fresh water because of the aquifers under the limestone of the state of Florida. But if the ocean water were to permeate and enter into that, it would turn salty, and there's really no way to purify it. There's desalination plants, but they're extremely expensive and highly inefficient, and we would essentially end up with nothing but rainwater to survive on. So for now, they're safe. But for fresh water to turn salty water fresh makes no sense. Unless it's a miraculous life-giving water. For fresh water to water the desert and create trees that produce fruit every month doesn't exist. It's unheard of. And yet here Ezekiel sees this vision. The temple is Christ himself. Remember with the Samaritan woman at the well in the gospel, he tells her, give me a drink. How can you, a Jew, ask me, an impure, unclean Samaritan woman, nonetheless, to touch anything and hand it to you to drink? You'd be unclean. You're a rabbi. I'm a sinful woman. Woman, if you knew the one who was asking for a drink, you would ask him for a drink, and he would give you water from which you would never thirst again. Sir, give me that water so I don't have to come back to this well constantly refilling my jugs. I am the living water. Jesus tells her and reminds us, he who drinks of me will never thirst, and I will give you life unto eternity. Christ is the source of the living water, the temple of his body, as he talks about in John chapter 2, today's gospel. And only when we drink of that water will our thirst be satisfied, will the saltiness of our personalities and our hearts and our sin be made fresh. How do we drink of this water? Through confession, first and foremost. Only when we receive his mercy frequently through confession can we heal the divisions within our own hearts and the conflicts and the battles that rage therein. Because if we are not a place and a person of peace and unity, how are we going to bring that to others or make any change in our own homes, let alone our society, our country, and our world? But as we are cleansed and the saltiness of our lives become fresh through the mercy of Christ, from the blood and water that flowed from his side from the cross, where the church was born, we need to be nourished. It speaks of this trees that blossom from the fresh water in Ezekiel that bear these fruit every month. Well, the cross is often referred to as the tree of life. And the fruit of that tree of life is nothing less than the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ that we receive in Holy Communion. We come to the tree of life to eat every Sunday in Holy Day of Obligation. We come to the waters to be of Christ's mercy in the sacrament of confession at least once a year, preferably once a month, to be washed clean of our sin and renewed and our thirst satisfied, which can only be satisfied by God alone. And when we experience the healing and nourishment within ourselves, only then can we be a source and sign of healing and unity beyond. We come here to be washed, to be cleansed, to be fed, so that being sent out at the end of Mass, we can be agents of unity to gladden the city of God in heaven as it is, so that it may be so on earth. Is that not what we pray in the Our Father? Thy kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. That can't happen without you. You are called to be in the world and to be a sign and symbol of God's presence where you work, where you shop, where you live, where you recreate. The Christian lives differently. And when we live as Christ did, people will know and we will stand out. Jesus symbolically cleanses the temple of the coins that had the image of Caesar, which the priests of the temple would not accept, a sign of a pagan idol for payment to purchase sacrifices. So they had this money changers, and they would charge people exorbitant interest so that, because the only money really there was the Roman coin. And they were taking advantage of the people. They were outer courts of the temple that pagans could enter to one point, women could enter to another point, and men even deeper, and the priests even deeper within the many layers of the temple, getting closer and closer to the Holy of Holies. And for practical reasons, within the walls, they had these money changers. Christ reminds them, this is a place of prayer. Stop turning it into a marketplace. We can often turn into a marketplace this very church. How? By coming in and playing this game of tit for tat with God. We come in oftentimes with prayers of exchange. God, I'm here on Sunday, so would you do this for me? God, I promise I won't do that again if you do that for me. What can I exchange with you, God, to win your favor? And Christ turns over the tables, chases them out. What are you doing? My Father loves you. He wants to give you everything you need to get into heaven. You don't need to exchange with him. He's not a business negotiator. This isn't a contract. It's a covenant. Destroy this temple of my body, and in 3 days I will raise it, so that you know that my Father can do anything, turning salty hearts to fresh as he turns salty water to fresh water, change the hearts of sinners to turn the hearts of men toward God their Father, and to live as Christ did toward women, their children, and others. Christ reminds them that this temple, ultimately, he says, will be destroyed, and not one stone will be left upon another. This happened through the Roman Empire around the year 78 AD. He told the woman at the well, one day you will neither worship in Jerusalem nor on this mountain, but where the Spirit is in truth. Because wherever Christ is, God is present. Every tabernacle of every Catholic church is his physical presence. And we come to worship, to be cleansed, forgiven, nourished, strengthened, to be sent out into a world consumed with conflict and division, from the very most basic level of the human heart to wars between countries that seemingly will not end, and conflicts between our own elected officials who refuse to put the people first and put aside their differences. We know what it's like to suffer division and the conflicts, both in our hearts and beyond. Today, Christ offers us a symbol that speaks to something different and far more deeper of unity, of healing, and of hope. But it begins with you and me. It begins with the temple of his body, who then enters the temple of our body, who then sends us out, body and soul, into the streets of Denver. I pray we can be as successful in our efforts as the Broncos have been this year.